try to spare our words. We trust the Lord will help us. I have a doctrine this morning, or maybe it's better called a teaching. I need the Lord to give wisdom, utterance to know how to speak these things. The kind of things that I have in mind, I have prayed and considered over for a long time and sought the Lord to help me understand. And I believe that the Lord has helped me to understand what I want to talk about. But that doesn't mean that I have the capability to communicate it to anybody else. I need the Lord to bless that, and the more so because part of what I have is a result just of simple maturity. As you grow older, you learn more about life. But I feel like the Lord would have me to try to deal with it because these lessons can be so valuable in the way people guide their lives and think about life. And also because the world today has lost sight of so much of these precious things. We really are a city set on a hill. We really do have something special and important that makes life rich and precious. So I intend to talk by the Lord's help about the difference between the genders. Start with a scripture in Genesis 1 and 27, way back in the creation. The prophet said, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them." God's plan in the beginning was a beautiful plan. Sin is the only thing that's ever changed that. Men and women are different. They have different dispositions. They have different physiques. It's always been astonishing to me that Roberta and I have three children. Two of them are girls and one is a boy. And the boy is tall and strong, and he grows hair on his face, and his hands are hard, and the girls are soft, and their eyes look different when they're the same blood. It's always been amazing to me, and I think the folks who teach evolution could never really explain that kind of phenomenon. It's something that the Lord created. And I have learned that everything that's opposite about a man and a woman is attractive, each to the other. When I first started to court Roberta, one of the first things I noticed was her hands. They're so different from mine. It made me want to hold them. And I never felt that way about any man's hands. Not my dad, not anybody else, but there's something about it just because they're different. Or the sound of her voice. You could be in a room full of men and a woman walk in the room and all she has to do is speak. And there's something about it that's attractive. It's appealing. The Lord made it that way. You can't account for that kind of phenomenon in any other manner. Just anything about the two that is different from the other is also attractive. And the fact is that almost everything about the two is different from each other. A good deal of the sorrow that has come into this world has come because of sinful abuse of those kind of things. And I know that the devil works so hard to try to steal the happiness, the delight, the blessed life that God intended humans to have in this world by damaging that part of our lives, because we're not intended to be conflicting with each other. We're intended to complement one another like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle to fit together. Things that I don't have, Roberta can supply to me. And things that she doesn't have, I can supply to her. It isn't necessary for me to be exactly like she is for us to be happy together. What's necessary is for us to each respect the way that the other person is. So, in the beginning, God created us in His image, and He created us in the distinctions that we have, the differences that we have. Those differences are more than physical. They're emotional. They're psychological. I'll confine my description of them to the language that the Scripture uses. Concerning sisters, the Bible uses words like shamefaced. It uses words like modest. Uses words like being subject to their own husband and things of that sort. Well, that's a partial description of it. And here is where that I have sought the Lord, as I say, for years to understand. Women are so different than men. I remember years ago, a sister came to the altar and wanted us to pray with her for stability in her life. And she said at last in frustration, weeping, and she meant it, "How can I possibly learn to be stable when I'm a different person every day?" Because she changes. Men don't change in that same way. And there are references in the Scripture to that, but I don't want to be too, I guess I'll pass over those things. And things like this, I have learned that I do not have the capability to walk into my closet and put on clothes that will please my wife. I don't have that capability. Now, you should be glad that she helps me, because her tastes are far, far better than mine, and it doesn't matter very much to me. I remember once some folks came and wanted to correct me because they thought the clothes I was wearing were too loud for a minister. And I had no idea. I grew up thinking the blue jeans and the blue chambray shirt were about as good a clothes as there were and suitable for all occasions. A mistake. I was wrong, but I still can't tell the difference very well. But my wife has an eye for those kinds of things. God made it be that way. And those things have caused me to pray for grace, not only with my wife, but with life in general. And as I say, I sought the Lord about it. And I want to make this point, and I hope that we can understand it. The Lord has helped me to see that all those things God made different, He put them there for the purpose of building family, protecting home, protecting children. They are beautiful. I've known men who hated women because of those differences. Any time that anything feminine was on display, you could see the anger rise up in their faces, and they'd be cutting and sarcastic about it and push not just their own, any woman away because of it. That's almost a form of blasphemy, because God made those things. And it's like rejecting the law. Women are not always righteous with the way they carry out their lives any more than policemen are. But God put the policeman in the office that he has, and he said in his word, he doesn't bear the sword in vain. And the Lord requires you and me to obey the laws of our land. to respect it, because all law ultimately moves toward the difference between right and wrong. People abuse it and get it wrong, but there's something so deep in us always that it always there is a pressure to be fair, to be even-handed, and it's prevailed to a large degree in a lot of places, and that's why the United States has had what it's had, and other developed countries have had. In the same way, the things that God put in men and women that are different from each other were not intended to irritate or to hurt or to be trouble. They are to complement one another. Now, I'll give you this for an example. And the Lord did this for the benefit of the species, for men and women, for him to create a safe haven into which little children could be born, where they could be trusted. Because children are so defenseless and so dependent on somebody protecting them and shielding, and so needful for somebody to nurture. And those who despise the places that God gave men and women in the world ultimately despise that beautiful thing that God made. I'll offer you this for an example. Eagles. Eagles typically mate for life. And that's the way God intended people to do. And an eagle who loses a mate will mourn for a mate. It will never find another mate as long as there's a chance that the first one is still living. God made them that way. Humans nowadays have the idea that in the marital relation you should never suffer any hardship. If you don't feel good, do something to change it. And if it doesn't feel good to be married, just live with somebody. But God didn't make his natural world that way. Eagles can feel loneliness. If an eagle loses a mate, he'll search for his mate. And they understand deprivation in a way, but they don't. It doesn't make them promiscuous to be that way. They mate for life. God intended for people to mate for life too. But, well, I read a story a naturalist wrote about this, who studied eagles one time. Said, and the eagle pair built a nest in the top of a tree. The female eagle starts a nest because she has an instinct. She can't think. Her feelings are not from her intelligence. It's something God put in her. You and I have some instinctive things too, God put in us. We can't really even change them. We should never be asked to change them. And a female eagle will start to build a nest, and a male helps her. And he couldn't tell you why, but she is always initiator of it, and he helps her. And they build it the way they do, tile in a tree somewhere. Maybe you've seen, there are some of them around here, big. Sometimes big as a bushel basket or bigger, things like that. And they put a lot of work and effort into it. Get the nest built, and after a while, Mother Eagle lays an egg. The male eagle is ready to throw it out of the nest. He has no idea what that is. He thinks it's just something that is an intrusion in the nest, and he's ready to throw it out. But the female teaches him very quickly that's to be protected. She'll fight him. She'll resist him. She'll chase him away. She is fierce. Rudyard Kipling wrote a poem about it years ago. He said the female of the species is more deadly than the male. And in his poem, he said, a man goes out and cuts some wood and meets a bear. And the bear growls at him and charges him a little bit, and he runs and gets away and comes back scared and tells everybody what an exciting adventure he had. Goes out next week and meets a female and got some cubs, and he doesn't come back. She'll do more to protect her cubs than the male will to protect his food, for instance. Well, so with an eagle. So the male doesn't know that this is something that God intended. She just sees that egg as an intrusion. But the female chases him away, even though she's smaller than he is. She'll force him to leave that egg alone. And then after a while, there'll be four or five eggs or three eggs, something like that. And he'll join in, sitting on the eggs, and each of them protect them. It's something God put in him, because he learns to understand, partly through the female, that they need to be protected. Men don't feel about babies like women do. God made them differently. Men love babies. I love my children. And I love the children in our congregation, but it's a different kind of love than women have. God made it that way. And part of the love that I have for children, I have learned from my wife. She taught me the value of them. God intended it to be that way. So after a while, the eggs are sat on through their gestation period, and then they start to hatch out. And the male comes back, and there's a little chick there where there was an egg before, and he'll fly into a rage. He was protecting the eggs. He had no idea that was ever going to be anything more. And he's ready to kill that little chick and throw it out of the nest. And here again, the mother eagle is going to teach him a lesson. That's what it was all about. And she will force him to protect and shelter that little chick that's there in the nest. All of this is incomprehensible to him. He would never arrive at understanding that if he weren't in a nest with a female eagle. But she helps him understand it's because she has feelings that he doesn't have. Because order in the nest means something to her that it doesn't mean to him. Understanding what's taking place when the egg is born, when it is hatched, the egg is laid, that doesn't have the meaning to him that it did to her. And also when the chick is born, God put it in that female eagle to be that way. We humans have some of those very same kind of traits in us. And when men feel dismayed or displeased because their wives are acting in that kind of way, it'll help if we understand that what is really on display there, it's not just a difference in personalities, not just a difference in communication. There's something deeper than that. This is the plan God made to protect children who are innocent, who are helpless, who are not able by any means to do anything for themselves, and they need a stronger hand over them. And that strong hand is a mother, according to the plan that the Lord made. And each of us have a place in fostering that plan. I've got a copy of the wedding vows here with me this morning. Good many of our folks are out in California, right, or in Oregon now, and they've just heard some of these vows spoken. It's the beginning of a life together. I'll not read it all, but I'd like to read part of it to you. Pardon me, it's from the old Episcopalian service. Most of our vows come from that. The pledges are based directly on the scriptures. And they say things like this, to the man. It's always spoken to the man first, because the man is to be the head of the home. His covenant is a strength upon which all of this depends. Female builds a nest, but it's the strength of the male that makes it all stay together. Men are to be strong in life, folks. Men are to be willing to take accountability and responsibility for what goes on in their home. So he asks a question. Will you trust her as your best earthly friend? Promise to love, cherish, and protect her. I want to emphasize this word, trust. It's a plan the Lord made not long ago. A dear friend had a discussion with me, and he's talking about the financial course of his business. He said, things haven't gone well the last year. He said, I've had reverses. He said, I've had setbacks. He said, I have put some money away somewhere to protect what may happen to my business if worst comes to worst. And I haven't even told my wife about it. And I didn't say anything to him, and maybe I should have. But I was disappointed when he told me that. Why would you tell it to somebody like me and you wouldn't even tell your own wife? Trust her as your best earthly friend. Women don't think about money and work and duty in the same way that men do. They don't. But when you take one into your life and you're intimately bonded together, whatever misfortune befalls you affects her profoundly. She has the right to share her views and opinions and understanding with you. More than that, the sacred trust, the awareness, we have common cause. We're in this together. I'm seeking her happiness as I seek my own. To trust her. Now, this is a pledge that you can make. It's a commitment. It's a decision that you can make. Just like the eagle. When he's in the nest and somehow that female eagle makes him understand that this little round oblong object here is precious. It's the reason for the nest and we must protect it and keep it. He trusts that she knows what she's doing. It's not natural to him. His nature is to go and fly and catch some fish and bring it back and eat it there in the nest. He wasn't thinking about anything more than that. But God has thoughts that are beyond his thoughts. And he intended to make this something better. He knows this eagle's going to die one day. And if they're going to continue to be eagles in the world, going to have to be some more that come along. So he uses her through her instincts to teach him a lesson. If a man won't trust his wife as his best earthly friend, he cuts off something beautiful the Lord put in her to make them a full and complete unit. I say that so it makes sense. You understand what I'm trying to tell you? I've seen men, as I say, who hated that in their wives, the difference between them, the sensitivity, the tendency to talk. I've known men are a strong, silent type. They won't tell you what's going on in their lives or business. Enjoy just being remote. I'm a little that way myself. But if you want to find out what's going on in their life, get around their wife. She'll have a little different take on it. Doesn't have the same motivation to perhaps to. They talk. Well, trust her as your best earthly friend. That means that you share the deep inner confidences of your heart. Will you promise to love and cherish and protect her? No woman can fully give her trust to a man whom she is not confident can protect her from the storms of life. Women have a need to be protected. The process of bringing children into the world makes a woman very vulnerable. It's natural that God wants that she needs to be protected. Men need to take a pledge if they're going to participate in that. This is under my arm. This is sheltered here. That means so much more than just using physical strength to chase the burglars away. I was so foolish when I was young. Get together on Saturday and all the guys want to play football. I like football too. Difference is they were single and I was married. There's a time to play football and there's a time to make your wife feel protected. She needs to be able to feel that any time she says, my need is great. There are many ways to say that, but that's the message. I'll stop what I'm doing to meet her need. That's what it means to be protected, to be there for her, to fill that part of her life. This is what we promise to one another. And there are reasons for this. God made it that way. Cherish and protect her, considerate of her happiness, to cultivate for her sake all manly virtues. I knew a man one time, hadn't been married very long. His father-in-law came to visit unexpectedly, knocked on a door. It was late at night. He was in town, perhaps on other business. He knocked on the door, and they didn't know who it was. They weren't expecting company. The man crawled under the bed and told his wife, "You go answer the door." Cultivate for her sake. You cultivate peas or corn in the garden. You hoe out the weeds. You make it grow. You do things to make it stand up. Men should stand up in life. Men should take the brunt of life to protect, to shelter, and to cultivate those manly traits that make you able to do that. It means to be strong. It means to be strong enough sometimes to say, "I'm sorry, honey. I've told you things I shouldn't have told you. I've used my tongue when I should have been using my head. Please forgive me." Cultivate those things. Develop them. That's what we promised. That is the race. That is what the Lord had in mind when he put the first pair together. We think of the ideal marriage. I think of some folks I've known sometimes who said, "Well, God wasn't in our marriage to begin with, or never would have had the trouble that we do." I won't say about that altogether, but there was no doubt he was in this first one. He created them for each other, and he made them with these differences. He intended them to develop the means to deal with those differences, and part of that is to cultivate for her sake all manly virtues, and in all things to seek her happiness as you seek your own. And now I wish to read you part of what the bride promises. Hers is second to the man's always in the marriage vow on the basis of the offer that's extended to her in the same way that it's appropriate for the man to propose to his lady. Once that platform has been laid for her to offer herself, it's time for her to repeat her vow. Choose him from all others as he has chosen you, to trust him in the same manner as your best earthly friend. Promise to love, to comfort, and to honor him. That word comfort is not in the man's vows. A good woman has a comfort to offer that the best of men can never give in the same way. And that is what God made her able to give to children. I try. I've raised three of them. I've got some grandchildren, and I love them dearly. And when the mothers bring them to me and they're crying and they're 6 months old, I do the best I can and glad to give them to Roberta when I get the chance. Because she can look at them and tell what's the matter with them. And I've been around them as long as she has, but I don't have that same capability. I feel about like that eagle. I wouldn't know what to do with them if it weren't for having her there. I'm so grateful that she's there. They have a comfort to offer. Something God made that's beautiful, that's meant to be in the relationship. You understand what I'm saying? Pornography destroys all of that. Careless, wanton lust make that that was intended to be beautiful, defiled, and wicked. The devil's trying to steal from us, folks. This is the very richness and beauty of life. It's not in money. Money comes and goes. Money can only give you so much, but there's nothing like having people around you you can trust. Because a trust doesn't stop with a marriage relationship. I know there are folks in all of our congregations who are living single lives because of the circumstances of life. However, I say to you, when folks are in trust relationships and they learn to cultivate these kind of things, it doesn't stop just with your companion. A virtuous man, a man who is a man, who stand up and face life, he'll do it for a congregation. He'll do it for the children that are in the congregation. It's like stretching out your feathers. And a woman who is a woman, who cultivates for her husband's sake, all the feminine graces that the Lord has given to her, that makes her beautiful everywhere. There's nothing like a godly grandmother to give comfort to a little child who just stubbed his toe out in the driveway. You ever smell the cookies baking? They're just... Mother can kiss it and make it all better. My son was working with me on a job and taught him this lesson. He stuck a chisel in his hand. And that goes with being a carpenter. And I told him, don't bleed on the wood, and I have to sand it out. He thought that was awful hard, till he had some men working from him and never heard anybody talk to him that way. My wife would never say that to him. She said, oh, son, you know, let me bandage that up. Oh, that's awful. And so she's got a comfort to get. I don't have that the same way. That's what this says here in the wedding vows, and it's based on the scripture. I'm not taking time to read it, but comfort and honor him. That word also is not in the man's vows. I have an example of that. I knew a man who was a farmer. He borrowed money from the bank to make his crop. And the banker told him, now, you're going to owe everybody in town. You're going to owe the tractor dealer and the fertilizer dealer, everybody, groceries maybe even. But when you get your money and the crop is sold, bring the check to me. Pay this off first, and then we'll work with all of these others. But the check came in, and his wife got the check. And in her knowing what she had said, didn't trust her husband, did exactly the opposite. Went off and paid everybody else off, and then he didn't have any money to bring back to the banker because she felt like she knew better than he, that he couldn't be trusted. The Bible said for the woman not to usurp authority over the man. The word usurp is taken from the Greek automatos, and what it means is to automatically decide he's not to be trusted, so I have to step up into that place. That's not what you're saying when you promise to honor somebody. That means you trust his judgment. That means instead of tearing him down, you try to build him up. Make him look as good as you can. The reason my wife corrects me about my clothing, which I deeply appreciate, is that it makes me look better than if I just bumble on in my own, mingle things up that had not to be together and so forth. And in so many other ways that I don't even notice, my wife finds ways to make me look good. I'll give you a very brief example of that. We were going one time into a funeral home with a family. They hadn't been in to see the deceased man yet. We were there to have the first meeting with the mortician. And we approached the door of the funeral home, and my wife dashed in first. I didn't know why. But the other women who were with us noticed it and have never forgotten it. She went in to see that man to see if he'd look appropriate for his living wife to come and see him. She wanted him to look as good as she could. She thinks about things like that I miss all the time. She has a capacity to comfort and to honor, and she can use that. A woman who has a mind to do that can use her femininity to undercut her husband just like she can use it to build him up. And when you do, you're letting the devil steal something precious from you. Don't want to be that way. Honor him and to cultivate for his sake all womanly graces. Guard his reputation and so forth. One more story. I remember a woman years ago, a young girl. She was young. She was kind of a tall, awkward girl. But every girl has some feminine graces. She wasn't raised very well. And she came to us off the streets. And she was wearing her normal clothing were bib overalls and brogan shoes and work shirts. If you didn't see her hair, you wouldn't know she was a woman. And I remember how the other folks took her in and they started trying to teach her to develop, to cultivate. That means you work on these things that are different. The hands that are smaller and all the other things. Cultivate them because they're attractive, because the Lord gave you that. cultivate for his sake all womanly graces, to guard his reputation, to assist him in his life work. Well, I know there are men who are better cooks than their wives. I know this is not a universal example, but I nevertheless offer it in this context because in the case which I'm about to mention, the man was not a cook and his wife was. He was leaving her. He was being mean to her. She called us to have prayer with her. She came to our camper or wherever we were. Said he's coming home today. Said I need him to change his life. Would you pray with me? And we got down and prayed like that. But she prayed and said, Lord, when he opens the door, let him smell that roast that's cooking. Let him smell the potatoes that are cooking there. She's cultivating something for him to make a home. It takes a woman to make a home. It takes a man to make a home safe. That's God's plan. Folks, the devil's trying to take all of that away from us. I got an ugly word to describe to you. It's perversion. I got an old Webster's dictionary. It's maybe 100 years old or so as my grandfather's, and it's an unabridged. Defined it this way: pervert means to turn from truth, propriety, or from its proper purpose, to destroy it from its use and end specifically, to misinterpret through evil motives or bias, to turn from the right or to corrupt. Perversion is a diverting from the true intent or object, change to something worse, a turning or applying in an unauthorized manner to a wrong end or use. You know what's going on in our country today. People who believe in these kind of things, we're being called homophobes. We're being told that we're wrong. We're being told that our nation should accept two people of the same gender marrying one another, living together like husband and wife. It's impossible without perverting what God's plan was. Male eagles don't do that. Female eagles don't do that. They don't have the capability. They're not built for that. You and I weren't built for that either. It is perverted for a man to want to act like a woman. It's perverted. It's not God's plan. It undermines the whole process of this beautiful thing that he gave to his people in his world. It's perverted to do that. It's perverted for a woman in a similar manner to deny the femininity that God put within her, or to direct it toward someone of the same gender that she is. You see what the world's trying to take from us? I hope that some of this at least has made some sense to us today. And this is something precious the Lord has given to make our lives beautiful. It's noble. We ought not complain about the differences that there are between men and women. The right thing is to get down on our knees and thank the good Lord for the plan that he made. It's a right plan. I don't want to destroy my little chicks. I never have been able to raise our children like my wife has done. I was out working. I came home with sawdust in my hair. My wife met my children every day when they come home from school and talked to them, because children need to talk. And she wanted to hear what they had to say, get them to open up their minds. And that's how she found out what was going on at school. And she knew that when they came home, they're always hungry. And she'd have a snack for them there every day. And they learned to look forward to that. It was my wife who would take the time every morning to make sure she had prayer with my children before they went off to school. I was going on to work somewhere and so forth. Oh, it's the Lord's plan, and it's beautiful when we do it right. And folks, I want to tell you something. If you live to be as old as I am, the devil's going to tempt you sometime or another toward an illicit relationship. Young love is quicksilver. It's exciting. It's entrancing. But old love is like old gold. You can't manufacture it. Having developed through the years the adaptation to one another, understanding of one another, shared our deepest successes and failures, there's nothing like it. There's no way to replace it. There's no wonder that people who have lived so many years and lost a companion grieve over it. May I counsel you? Perhaps you think some of what I said today is foolish, but this is certainly true. Practice fidelity. Be true to who you are. Be true to your gender. Be true to who you take for your life's companion. If you find yourself in a place in life where you walk alone, be true to your family. Be true to your personhood. What God made you to be is the most fulfilling way there is to live in this world. And God in heaven honored that. It is a plan that he made. Male and female created he them. That's what he'd have you and me to be in our lives. Thank you so much for the courtesy of your attention once again this morning. And pray for me, the Lord give me wisdom to understand how he wants me to handle these kind of things and correct what I need to. And pray for me, the Lord give me grace to live to my own preaching. Amen.